Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it.
My guest today is Rob Knopf, solutions architect in the New Strategy and New Ventures group at Cadence. He is a technologist focusing on corporate strategy and interfaces between domain-specific solutions. A key area of expertise is digital implementation of safety-critical and high-reliability systems. He has extensive experience in both semiconductor design and EDA. Welcome to the podcast, Rob.
Thanks, Dan. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, I like to ask people how they first got started in semiconductors. Do you have an interesting story to tell?
Yeah, I think we all do. I got started in semiconductors in kind of the mid-90s as part of a college internship. And it was not really something I sought out. It was really more kind of by accident, right? You know, as a young electrical engineer, I was just looking to get a job, to be honest. And, you know, I got lucky enough to land an internship with Tektronix out in Portland, Oregon. And showed up the first day and got introduced to my boss and learned what complementary metal oxide semiconductors do. And the rest is kind of history. And the funny enough, that little Freudian slip there, at the end of the first session for the internship, I had to give a little, you know, report back. What did I learn? What did I do? To the group that I worked in and some of their peers. And the group was focused on CMOS designs. And the funny thing on my title slide, I called them complex metal oxide semiconductors. And after the presentation was done, my boss came up to me, shook my hand and said, you know, it was really great having you here. We hope to have you back next time. But they're complementary, not complex. He's like, they can be complex at times, but that's not the acronym. And
that's pretty funny.
Ever since.
Yeah. So what brought you to Cadence? You know, and what do you do at Cadence?
So what brought me to Cadence were people. You know, they're very solid. The technology is interesting. I'm happy to be back in the EDA. Like you mentioned, you know, I've gone in and out between EDA and semiconductor design throughout my career. You know, I really value the mix of disciplines and the perspective that you get being on either side of the fence. But, you know, my last stint in semiconductor design, it was really good. It was, you know, really rewarding being part of a high performing team and working on some challenging designs. But I really found that I missed the people, you know, that I had worked with in the past in EDA. I missed the nature of the work, the, you know, kind of free form, the huge variety. EDA is a very special part of the semiconductor ecosystem. The variety of designs you encounter, the companies you work with, the technologies you touch, there's very few places like it in the world. And I was really missing that. And I kind of feel like in some ways it's sort of like, you know, the sailor longing for the sea and getting tired of being in port too long. And it feels great to be back on the open ocean.
Yeah, I agree. EDA is kind of like a window into the semiconductor world, right?
Yeah, in some ways you feel like you're kind of at a mutual fund, you know, like you are sampling across a huge spectrum of technologies and, you know, seeing things, you know, everything from, you know, cell phone chips and personal electronics, you know, to RFID chips that power themselves to the world's most powerful AI processors. It's a fantastic place to really see the truth of what's happening out in the industry.
Yeah. So speaking of AI, that's why we're here. First of all, where is AI being applied in the EDA chip design flow?
AI is a fantastic technology. And like all technologies, it has, you know, places where it really works well to solve a problem. And there's places where, you know, it may not be the best fit. But in the places where it really sings, it can do wonders. And so at Cadence, we're applying this really across the spectrum of engineering design and scientific discovery. And so for, you know, like EDA specifically, you know, the digital design flow is a fantastic place to apply AI to learn from the past generation design to produce a better quality result in the next one, and to search the huge solution space that there is out there. Analog design obviously has a ton of areas where it can also be applied, you know, where there's even more degrees of freedom than you had in digital, although the number of objects, right, that you're manipulating could be smaller. Debug and verification, huge scope of applicability there, just because you're oftentimes trying to make sense of a result you have and figuring out why it doesn't match what you expected. And AI is a great tool to be able to kind of do that sort of understanding and deep reasoning. You know, from there, if you get outside of the chip, there's still, you know, huge rooms where AI, you know, can be applied and is being applied to the design flow. Packaging, 3D IC, the explosion of opportunity that we have with chiplets these days, even getting bigger than the whole PCB environment. There's many very similar analogies to problems that have already been tackled in digital design and custom design inside the chip, where there's, you know, low-hanging fruit and, you know, good areas for applicability there. Multi-physics design, and then, you know, you can even go on from there. So long story short, it's really no shortage of opportunities. And in terms of production quality software, we're seeing it across the stack.
Right. So what areas of AI applications is Cadence focusing on?
So if I look at how we're applying it, if you abstract, you know, at the Cadence level, which is where, you know, I spend most of my time, we really look at it in terms of three different layers of AI. At the very bottom foundation, you have a layer of AI enhanced design engines, and those are really transparent to the user. That's really our R&D using AI to improve the accuracy and runtime of our fundamental engines, our placers, our optimizers, extraction, et cetera. The next layer that sits on top of those AI enhanced engines are a whole suite of AI optimization solutions. And so this is really where we're using AI to help search through a broader solution space, to help guide the user to a more optimal outcome, et cetera. And that's really, you know, all those tools I talked about where we're dealing with digital design, analog design, et cetera. And then sitting on top of that, and this is really the kind of newest, sexiest one, is a generative AI copilot. And so this is, you know, really designed to support three basic functions. One of them is intelligent search and support. We just launched the use of generative AI in our support infrastructure that's accessible via the cloud. You've got it in terms of verification, where you're doing deep reasoning with the design collateral about, you know, why something is happening compared to what you expected it to do. And then, you know, the very top is just the generation of new collateral. So using a large language model to generate RTL, to generate SDCs, to generate, you know, any number of different design collateral. Now, all of that, the AI enhanced engines, AI optimization solutions, and the generative AI copilot, this is all based on an underlying AI and analytics platform that we call JedAI. This is an open platform. We've got APIs so that you can plug in any number of your own applications to it. It can be delivered on-prem or in the cloud. We ship it with Meta's Llama, but it's also open. If, you know, people have their own LLMs that they have on site that they've tuned, et cetera, you can use those as well. And then works and plays well with NVIDIA's NIMS microservices and NeMo Retriever for RAG.
Interesting. So do you have use cases we can talk about, you know, front-end design, back-end design, verification? You know, can you dive in here a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. And this is really where it gets exciting, right? You know, because it's easy to talk about AI in terms of a glossy, you know, sparkly object. But, you know, really why EDA and chip design is fascinating, it's applied science, right? It's actually getting work done. And so at a certain point, you've got to roll up your sleeves. And even if the solutions aren't beautiful, you've got to hit your tape out. You've got to get your work done. And seeing AI get applied to those areas is really rewarding. You know, I'd say I've really seen it kind of in two separate waves. The most structured parts of the design flow adopted AI first. And that's kind of natural, right? Like if you think about someone doing digital place and route synthesis, you know, et cetera, or digital verification, they're already used to adopting a host of automated solutions to get their job done, right? It's not tractable to hand place a 5 million instance design, right? And so, you know, those workflows are incredibly well suited for AI. And so our digital design tool, Cerebrus, we've seen the most widely deployed. It's like over 450 tape outs now, you know, across our customer base. Like one example that we highlighted at our last conference was NVIDIA using this to get an 8x productivity boost and 5.4% lower power on one of their GPU designs. But we're seeing this across the customer base, right? Like this is probably one of the bigger success stories that I've seen in terms of our deploying AI in production and how quickly it's ramped. And this is a technology that's not just, you know, for the people who are working at 3 nanometer. You know, this is stuff that even at 65 nanometer, you're seeing that it can find better solution points. It can deliver lower power on an existing design, et cetera. So, you know, this technology, it's been really wonderful to watch this go out into the market. Where we see this really being used is, you know, in that initial ramp up, when you're first trying to, you know, frame up really quickly, you know, how far off is the RTL from hitting the goals? Is it able to fit inside the floor plan it needs? Do we need to co-optimize floor plans, et cetera? But then like, as you start hitting your pace and really getting a good recipe, being able to then take that recipe and in a warm start mode, be able to scale it to other blocks or even to the next project so that it doesn't have to take as long kind of figuring out where it is. The next, you know, area where we've seen a ton of adoption here is in the verification side. Again, it's a fairly structured area of the flow. A great example here that, you know, we highlighted at our user conference this past spring, you know, is Qualcomm doing a deployment here where they were able to get a 20x improvement in verification CPU hours. And so this is a huge thing. You know, back when I got started in semiconductors, PNR was really the area that was the long tent pole. It was the one that was the most challenging. It was just getting automation. In modern semiconductor design, though, the complexity of the functionality has exploded. And so being able to apply AI to digital verification, that's really where you start seeing project schedules, you know, get reined in. And so things like, you know, what we're doing with Verisium on the verification side, those are a huge improvement. Now, the next wave in terms of use cases, this really gets into more of the unstructured parts of the design flow. And so this is really more the terrain of custom analog design, advanced packaging, PCB, et cetera. These areas, I think traditionally people have approached it more as art rather than science or, you know, than engineering. And so there's been a little more reticence about applying some of the structured automation that we just take for granted on the digital side. That said, that means there's a lot of low-hanging fruit out there. And so we've seen some tremendous advancements, especially in some very basic areas like placement and optimization of components on a PCB. You know, this is something that if you think about the technology that's been out there to tackle this problem for digital PNR, where you're handling millions of instances, handling thousands of instances is really quite trivial. So we see huge gains in productivity, quality of results on the PCB side, the package design side. You know, what I see is, you know, now AI being turned to the problem of 3D IC and chiplets. This is opening up a tremendous opportunity for new players in the ecosystem and new opportunities for designs. But the sky's the limit. You know, you can go then even further outside of the chips, applying the same basic principles that we've used to be successful in semiconductors. There's a lot of applicability there in the multi-physics space in terms of automotive design, aero design, robotics, et cetera.
Right. So looking ahead, what do you think the biggest growth areas of AI are in EDA?
So when I think about growth for AI, it really, you know, if you think back to what happened with the internet, there were really kind of three phases of growth. The very first phase was to build the infrastructure itself. You know, this is like where fiber was being laid, where, you know, you had networking companies, you know, just starting up and exploding in size, right? We're seeing the same thing with AI today, right? There's a tremendous amount of growth that's happening right now in terms of building out the infrastructure itself. And so building the data centers, you know, building the semiconductors that go in them, the PCBs, the racks, designing and you know, operating a data center itself, all of these are the same basic problem that we've already tackled in semiconductors, but just at slightly different scales with slightly different flavors of physics happening. And so there's a huge amount of growth in EDA if you think about the build out of that AI infrastructure. The data centers themselves, you know, the Jensen said at GTC, right, the data center is the new unit of compute. So the same kind of tooling, the same digital twinning and AI optimization that we use to design and manufacture a semiconductor, there's a lot of applicability there at the data center level. So there's a big amount of growth there. That's happening now. If I look a little farther forward, right, kind of that horizon two area, we really think about, you know, transforming existing solutions. And so taking what you're doing now, adding AI into it, making it a little better. And then the third phase of opening new markets, right? Of being able to do something you couldn't do before. And that's the really exciting part that I see as far as growth area in AI. That's where we get into Horizon 2 and Horizon 3 sort of territories. That's where, you know, things like moving from AI being in the data center to physical AI or autonomy. You know, you think about self-driving cars, drones, robotics. There's a tremendous amount of opportunity there in the markets and a huge amount of opportunity for EDA and SDA or system design and automation to take forth. And so I see a lot of growth there. But, you know, kind of what gets me really excited is thinking about what's beyond that. And that's really that Horizon 3 area where you're looking at sciences. And so thinking about the kind of problems that are being tackled today in life sciences and digital biology, climate studies, et cetera, there's a lot of opportunity there that the same skills, the same hard work that we have in EDA to use semiconductors, there's a lot of transfer and a lot of applicability in these new greenfield spaces.
Yeah, you know, I can't think of a more exciting time to be in EDA, and I've been in EDA for 40 years. In fact, when I started in the early 80s, we had this thing called the tall, thin engineer, and it was kind of an analogy where one engineer could pretty much do, you know, a design to tape out. Are we ever going to get back to that? Or, you know, when will parts of the chip design process be done without human intervention? And what parts of the process would that be?
It's a fascinating question. And I've had the privilege of working with some good tall, thin engineers. They're usually the ones that, you know, kind of leave the biggest impression on you, you know, because you see these people who, because they exist throughout the whole design phase, they see things that you never could if you were just an expert in one part, you know. And my belief is the tall, thin engineer never really went away. I think that there's definitely tons of aspects, right, where, you know, projects don't happen unless you have hundreds and hundreds of, you know, engineers working on them, right? You know, these truly titanic chips. But, you know, make no mistake, in each of these companies, even the big ones, there are those people who aren't as easy to pigeonhole. And they're the ones who are called in to debug the truly hard problems, shepherd, you know, the blocks that truly matter through the flow. And it's my belief that we'll see more and more of these tall, thin engineers as AI comes in to kind of turbocharge what has already happened in EDA. You know, if you think about it, there aren't that many mask designers, sitting around. Whereas, you know, back when you and I got started in EDA and semiconductors, you still had people whose jobs were, you know, for better or for worse, polygon pushers. And these were you know, people who were geniuses at looking at physical shapes and reasoning, you know, new floor plans, new layouts, new ways to route traces or place cells, et cetera. What I see happening as AI comes in and automates more and more of the design flow, right? What PNR already started, what synthesis already started, et cetera, we're going to see more tall, thin engineers because we're going to be able to truly take people's expertise, these natural skills they have as designers and engineers and creators, the exact tall, thin person you're talking about. Because we'll be able to automate more and more of the, you know, kind of, for lack of a better word, drudgery, right? You know, that can happen. The, you know, hey, run 10 different runs. Let's look to see, you know, which of these options are the best, or, you know, what point in the, you know, voltage versus frequency curve should we hit? You know, what about this floor plan, you know, all exploration? AI is going to be able to automate so much more of that design space exploration. AI is going to be able to automate so much more of the individual runs themselves that engineers are going to be spending more time creating. They're going to spend more time designing. They're going to spend more time collaborating with each other. And we're going to see, you know, even better results. And so, you know, my belief is, like I said, the parts we're already seeing AI, you know, take over quickest, the more structured part, the digital design, digital verification, we'll see the highest degree of automation there. But I think it'll get the most exciting when we start seeing that automation thread into what today is more unstructured and allow more people who have their own unique expertise, their own unique creative gifts, enter into the design arena that today maybe are held back or, you know, are afraid to get in there because they don't have whatever the pedigree is to get those jobs or to be in those places. So I think we're on the cusp of, you know, a truly exciting time. And I share exactly what you said. There is frequently in my career, I've thought, wow, you know, being in EDA or semiconductors is truly exciting and amazing. But where we are today and what I see in the immediate future, it's, you know, 10x what I ever had before.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely going to change. You know, one last question. Some people are using AI and ML synonymously. And, you know, I certainly know the difference because I was in simulation for quite a few years. when you talk about AI, are you talking about AI, ML, or a combination thereof?
It's really a combination. And the distinction is important. You know, like machine learning is that base foundation, right? And it can cover a huge spectrum. AI being one classification of that, generative AI being an even smaller subset. And I think that it's really important for us as engineers to be precise in what we're using and what it is. It's really tempting to jump on a bandwagon of a term that gets more clicks or hits or, you know, whatever. But I think it's really important, especially with the explosive growth that we're seeing today, to be intellectually honest about the terminologies of the technologies that we're applying, because there's limitations in everything. And if you're not being intellectually honest about what you're doing and what it is, other people might be misled. They might be going down the wrong paths. You know, we'll all help each other advance the state of the art, advance society, by being intellectually honest about what we're doing Even if, you know, that area you're exploring isn't the new hotness, you could be sitting on a gold mine. And so, you know, I think it's really important to be intellectually honest about the terminology and the technology that we're using.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I spent a couple of years in place and route, and sometimes the place and route couldn't finish, and it was, then you're just stuck. And we had rip up and retry place and routes, and then we had brute force place and routes. So it has evolved. I think this is AI and machine learning has definitely made our jobs easier and will continue to do so.
It's made it easier. And at the same time, you know, I think I would make sure that everyone is squarely appreciative of the fact that our jobs will always be hard, right? Like AI is going to make certain parts of them easier, but then make no mistake, you're going to get to focus on the new hard part of the problem, right? Or because whatever you were working on before is easy now, you know, I don't know, you'll be working on, you know, two blocks instead of one. You'll be working on, you know, like pushing, we're always going to be pushing the limits. And, you know, and that's kind of, it can get difficult and depressing at times, but it's what keeps the game exciting.
Exactly. Hey, thanks, Rob. I appreciate your time and your wisdom. And, you know, I hope to have you back. And I certainly will see you at DAC.
You betcha. Thanks a lot, Dan, and really appreciate everything you're doing for the community.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.